Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
And today we are answering your listener questions.
Right, Joel, we've got a listener question Monday lined up for folks. We're going to take a few questions about robo-advisors, specifically Elevest, which is an investing platform geared towards the ladies. But we're going to talk about saving money for a baby. And we're also going to take a question about infinite banking and paying down your mortgage very quickly. We're going to get to those, plus a couple others today. But first, man, you wanted to talk about some... Did you get another fake scam phone call?
Man, I keep getting these things. Really? What's going on? It's funny, I actually randomly the other day answered a number that I didn't know, and it was my neighbor.
Oh.
It was my neighbor. I was like, I had like a condescending tone when I picked up the phone. I was like, hello.
I can't believe you.
It's like, hey, Joel, it's your neighbor. I was like, hey. I was getting ready to be like, don't call me anymore.
You're like, what is it, 2010?
I know. So now we have each other's numbers, and now I can answer happily from here on out. But no, this phone call that I wanted to quickly talk about was one from someone saying that I had thousands of dollars in unclaimed property. And of course, they wanted a fee to help me find this unclaimed property. They specifically said I had $13,000 out there in my name. And I was like, all right, cool.
Interesting.
Well, I'm going to go check this out on my own. And Matt, this is something we've talked about before, and it gets mentioned in the Facebook group from time to time, but we haven't talked about it on the show in quite a while. And so the easiest thing for people in 39 states to do is go to the website missingmoney.com. And even actually, if you go there and your state isn't a part of the Missing Money website, it will provide you the link to click through to your state's website. So Georgia, the state we're in, they don't participate in missing money. So you got to go directly to the state's website. I did that. I put in my name. I did the search. No missing money in my name. So this must have been some sort of scam attempt. And I just wanted to let other people know that, yeah, if anyone calls you and they're like, you've got this missing money, you got to pay us to find it. Like, you don't have to do that. Don't fall for it. You can easily go look to see if there's any money in your name, any unclaimed property that's sitting around, and you can claim it yourself. You don't need the help of anybody else.
Yeah, you can do it yourself. I will say there are companies out there who are called like finders or searchers or something like that, but there are legitimate companies out there who may have found money for you, but they're trying to get you to sign a contract, because if you do that, then they're entitled a percentage of what they find. And so they get a finder's fee or something like that. Sometimes it's capped at 10%. But other times, if they're just trying to get money from you up front, oftentimes they're just going to bolt, especially if you're someone who knows that you don't have money out there because you have searched those different websites. Yeah, you're definitely going to know that it's a scam in that instance. But again, you don't have to participate at all because you can DIY it. And like Joel said, missingmoney.com, unclaimed.org is another site that you can go to. And both of these sites will point you in the right direction if they don't have the databases themselves.
That's right. So yeah, just a big heads up for everybody out there. In case you get a call like this and you pick up, which, why did I do it? Like, I don't ever pick up calls when I don't know the number, except for on
evidently,
the random occasion.
Evidently, that's not true.
Maybe, all right, maybe it's 5% of the time. I don't know what I'm looking for in that experience. But.
I think we all know, Joel, which is you just want to talk to somebody.
I don't want to talk to somebody. I do like talking to
people. When Emily doesn't want to talk to you and your kids are off doing something else.
I talk to strangers.
Like, somebody's calling me? Oh, I want to talk to them. Whereas I do not ever have that inclination. I don't have that desire. I'll talk with you. I'll talk with my family. But I don't want to talk with random strangers.
I understand.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we're all different. But
beer time.
Yeah, beer time. So the beer we're drinking on today's show, this one's called Lovebirds 4. It's from Birds Fly South out of South Carolina. This one is their cuvee with raspberry. And I believe cuvee, it sounds really fancy.
Ooh la la.
I believe it just means like the best of the best. And so this is like an anniversary beer that they released for their 4th anniversary. And yeah, picked this up at the local bottle shop. Looking forward to having this one with you, man. But enough about the beer. We'll get to more on that later. Now it's time to get to listener questions. And for anyone out there who says, I've got a personal finance question, well, Matt and I would love to answer that for you if you're up for submitting it. Just go to our website, howtomoney.com/ask. There are simple instructions for you to record a voice memo and send it our way so that we can hopefully feature it on an upcoming episode. But Matt, let's get to the first question of the day. And this one's about target date funds.
Hey, Matt and Joel. This is Ashish from Atlanta. I'll try to keep it short. First of all, kudos to both of you for running such a great show. I really listened to all the episodes. My question was, I have Roth IRA, which I maximize. I maximize my 401k at work, and also have an investment account. I'm not a savvy investor in terms of picking stocks, and so I like the Target Retirement Fund. In fact, I have Vanguard with my Roth IRA. I was wondering if it's okay to use Target Retirement Funds in an investment account, which is not technically a retirement account. I don't hear anyone talking about that or you guys mentioning that. Just was wondering if that's okay. First, if it is allowed to use a Target Retirement Fund in an investment account, and if it is okay from your standpoint. Thank you so much.
Hey Ashish, glad to hear from a listener here in Atlanta, and you are crushing it with the amount of money that you are investing. So for everyone else out there, if Ashish is maxing out a 401k and a Roth IRA, that's a total of $25,500 that he's socking away every single year. And that's just stinking amazing. And also, Ashish, you mentioned not being a savvy investor. A lot of these so-called savvy investors aren't actually as great as they appear on Twitter, right? Everyone likes to brag when maybe like 1 out of 10 of their stock picks does better than the S&P, but they're not talking about the other 9 that are way underperforming the market. And so that's definitely something to keep in mind. Savvy and complex and complicated doesn't always necessarily mean better. And oftentimes when it comes to investing, it means worse.
Yeah. And the people that tout themselves as like these just investing gurus, yeah, they don't show you all their investments, and it's hard to tell whether or not they're actually, you know, crushing it, or whether they've got a lot lurking in the background that they're ashamed of, right?
True, man. Yeah, and real quick too, I crunched the numbers on, so he's socking away $25,500 every year. Assuming he continues to do that and he doesn't increase that amount as he gets older, if he does that and he earns just a 7% rate of return, he's going to be a millionaire in under 20 years.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
That's pretty impressive,
like,
man.
$1 million, Ashish, you're crushing it.
that's huge, man. And yeah, that is really, Matt, half the battle when it comes to investing is socking more money away.
It's just doing it.
I think sometimes people want to pick the right fund. They want to follow the savvy investor,
right?
And they want to get outperform the rest of the market. And that can be a fool's errand. That can cost you a lot of heartache, and that can actually lead to lower returns in many cases. And so, yeah, the biggest thing that you can get right, that you have in your ultimate control, is to be able to put more money towards your retirement accounts.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, it makes me think of like exercising. I think a lot of times people get hung up on the details. They're like, oh, well, what plan should I subscribe to? Or, oh, I need the right gear. Like, maybe I should, like, what kind of shoes should I be? Am I an overpronator or an underpronator when it comes to my stride? Like, all these specific things when it comes to exercise and running.
How many Peloton machines do I need in my house?
As opposed to just like getting out there and going for a walk, or getting out there and going for a run, we can overcomplicate things when instead we just need to move our bodies. The same thing is true when it comes to retirement. I think we just need to start saving and actually investing our money. It doesn't need to be all that more complicated than that.
And yeah, and what Ashish is trying to do, which what I love, is he's, you know, investing a lot, but he's also keeping it uncomplicated with target date funds. And
yes,
target date funds are excellent. And Ashish, to answer your question, yeah, you can invest in a target date fund within a brokerage account wherever you have your funds. You could even do it, you know, with an app like Robinhood or M1 Finance, as well as keeping it simple and opening that, you know, brokerage account where you have your retirement funds too. There's nothing preventing you from having all your money in that one fund that's going to gradually get more conservative as you near your retirement date. And some folks might wonder if having all your money in one fund across all those accounts means that you're not diversified enough. Well, the answer is no. And owning just one fund isn't a great strategy when we're talking about most funds out there. You might be sector specific. If you're all in on just an airline ETF, like all you're invested in is the airlines, you're not diversified enough. But when it comes to target date funds, those are highly diversified in their holdings. And so owning just that one fund allows you to be incredibly well diversified while keeping it super chill on your end. So yeah, Matt and I are big fans of target date funds, and they are definitely the easy button if you are looking to sock away lots of money and get rich over the long haul. Target date funds are just an easy choice, so you really don't have to sweat it.
Yeah, so they're definitely legal, they're allowed, and yeah, we approve of them as well, Ashish. We think that target date funds are fantastic. The Vanguard target date funds, Fidelity, State Street as well, they are all excellent options for you. And the real reason to choose a target date fund over anything else truly is because of the simplicity and convenience that they offer. The set it and forget it approach is incredibly appealing to a lot of folks. And that's understandable. You know, we love keeping it simple here. And since, again, the number one obstacle to investing for most folks is the perceived level of complexity, target date funds are the perfect choice for a lot of folks out there.
They're basically like the crock pot of investing. Like, it's the easiest way to make dinner, right? In a crock pot.
That's, I guess that's true.
I mean, instant pots still require like a little more hands-on approach. Like, you know, it's cooking everything quicker. It's like definitely truncating the timetable. But the crock pot, you literally throw everything in the morning and you literally consume it for dinner then. Like, you can eat it directly out of the crock pot. And that's basically what the target date fund does for, you know, your investable assets. They're also the perfect choice, I would say, for listeners out there who might be tempted to jump in and out of single stocks that are in the news, trying to time the market, trying to get involved in things that, like we said, are going to outperform the market. If you're trading based on the headlines that you've read, you're probably not making great investing decisions, or you might be setting yourself up to lose quite a bit of the money that you've invested, whereas investing in a target date fund, there's no guarantee of how it's going to perform in the next 1 or 2 years. But we know over the next 20 years how target date funds are going to perform. And because of the extreme amount of diversification that target date funds have inside of their holdings, like, you know, U.S. stocks, foreign stocks, we're talking bonds. I mean, really, target date funds are just incredibly well diversified. So, you know, you might not see just the exponential growth that you're seeing in some of the meme stocks out there, but those are short-lived. And a target date fund is one of the best ways to build wealth in the stock market over the long haul.
Yeah, certainly the least risky way to grow that wealth. All right, we've got a couple more questions that we're going to get to after the break, including saving, maybe even investing for a baby, as well as a question about aggressively paying down your mortgage. We'll get to both of those right after the break.
We're back. We've got a question from an overseas listener who is trying to figure out where to stash funds for his new baby.
Hi, Matt and Joel. This is Marijn from the Netherlands, the promised biking land. Me and my American wife are expecting our first baby. She's actually week 40 plus, so any day now. We are living in the Netherlands, but I know that my in-laws would love to spoil our baby. We probably will receive a check here and there. And even though my opinion about checks is that they're as modern as an Atari game console, I know that the US is pretty keen on them still. I would like to open a bank account for our daughter with a bank with a great mobile app so we can easily deposit checks when they come in and check her finances with our phones. What is your advice? What is a good bank to choose or a credit union so we can open an account for her, even though we don't have an address in the United States, and we're pretty spoiled if it comes to banking apps here in Europe. Curious what you'll say.
Hey, Marijn, good to hear from you. And man, the Netherlands, definitely the biking promised land. Is that what he said?
Yeah, it totally is.
Although I've never been there, I definitely am looking forward to traveling there at some point.
I went once and
you loved it, right?
Yeah, I loved it. But I was also just mesmerized when I left the train station. There's like a parking garage for bikes.
Was it the kind that has like the automated biking? I've seen ones where there's like little elevators. Like they, I don't know, you put them on there and they like go underground and I think somebody takes them somewhere.
I don't remember. I mean, it might have just been one floor, but I just remember seeing like thousands of bikes like in one place.
Oh my
gosh. Like, how do you even find yours, you know? But it was impressive.
You got to remember exactly where you changed it.
Yeah.
Well, and also too, congrats to your new baby that you and your wife have surely had by now, by the time you're listening to this question being answered. And, you know, you mentioned checks. They are definitely old school, but I will say Americans are definitely using fewer checks every year. The Federal Reserve Bank of Atlanta actually did some research and they found that consumers here in the U.S. use checks for just 7% of transactions, which is less than previous years, but it's actually still a lot more than I would have expected. And this study was from 2017, 2018, but I bet more folks have definitely gone digital in the last few years.
My guess is that checks are done for, you know, sometime in the next 5 to 10 years. Like, they're going to trickle out.
We literally don't use checks at all anymore.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, we get free checks from our bank, but it's one of those things.
Sits there in the drawer,
they
right?
Sit there, yeah. Yeah. I really don't know the last time I wrote one.
Yeah, Cash App, Venmo has completely replaced the need to be able to like write checks to even contracts. contractors
working
on their houses. But unfortunately, those apps don't work internationally.
True. Yeah. So let's talk about depositing checks. And you know, we can't speak necessarily, Maureen, to the best bank to hold deposits for a child over in the Netherlands specifically, right? Like, we're pretty familiar with kind of the best banks over here in the United States. But internationally, I mean, that's a lot of ground to cover. And so we're not quite sure. But it sounds like you do have some good banks that offer great apps that make it easy to deposit checks, which is awesome. So we would suggest that for sure. You definitely want to prioritize a bank that has a slick mobile app with mobile deposit. And also, too, you want to make sure that your bank accepts and deposits U.S. checks. You know, one way around this, you mentioned that your wife is an American. Well, if she can maintain her U.S. checking account by changing the mailing address to her parents' address, then that can make it much easier and potentially even free for them to be able to get money into your account.
That's right. And so, Marin, let's talk about what to do with that money, because unfortunately, it's not quick and easy. You know, if you're looking for a workaround to avoid some of those costs and some of the time associated with getting that money into your hands. And so much of this has to do with your bank there in the Netherlands, what it is that they offer. But if you are looking for quick and easy, you know, you're going to have to pay a fee and use a service like Wise. But at least then they could send that money over in minutes if they use a debit or a credit card. But let's talk about what to do with that money once you've gotten it. And, you know, of course, you're going to want to prioritize earning a decent rate of return. This is actually kind of hard to come by these days, but going with an online bank instead of kind of one of the bigger brick and mortar banks there to you locally will likely ensure that you're going to maybe make more than just zero in interest. That's at least definitely true here in the States. But here's the thing, if you don't necessarily need that money for the baby in the next few years, then you want to invest that money, not save it. And there's a big difference there between just saving that money and investing it and putting it to work.
Totally. And yeah, when we're talking about a baby here, you know, the earliest they might need any of the money that is being given to them or given to you guys, you know, after the birth is 16 years from now, at least in these States, right? That's when you can drive. That's when a kid maybe wants to buy a car.
But we're talking about the Netherlands here, so they don't need that.
Exactly. Buy your first bike.
Yeah, seriously. Bikes are much more affordable, so you can push that 16 off at least until 18 or 19, right?
And so yeah, it's really important to ask, what are these funds for? If you're not planning on your kid having access to these funds until they reach at least their teenage years, we really think that you should be investing on their behalf. You really aren't doing them any favors by keeping that money in a savings account earning relatively little for the next 15 plus years. In the US, saving that money in your own tax advantaged account, like a Roth IRA, and then being willing to use that money for them in the future is a worthwhile way to go. You know, 529 plans are another great vehicle that can help folks to invest for future education expenses. That's definitely something that people prioritize oftentimes when they get money at the birth of their child, is to open up a 529 account, start saving money for their higher education expenses. And even real estate investing, you could actually buy a property, Matt. I know someone who did this. What they did was they bought a quadplex, and over the years, they're paying it down, and they're going to use that property to essentially fund their child's education. And so there's all sorts of ways that you can invest to get a return. But if you keep that money in savings for the next 15 years, you're going to preserve the capital, but you're not going to grow it at all. And so, yeah, we would say invest some of that money for your child so that they have way more when they get to the age where they can actually use it.
That's right. Yeah. So, Marin, hopefully we were able to get you pointed in the right direction as to what you should be doing with that money. And that's something that, regardless of where you live, you can apply that if you have a baby. All right, Joel, let's get to our next question. This one has to do with a very ambitious goal of paying down a mortgage early.
Hey guys, this is Tyler coming to you from Portland, Oregon. First, I just want to say thank you so much for your podcast. I've been listening pretty regularly for the last couple of years, and the changes that it's helped motivate me to make in my wife and I's financial life have been just phenomenal. Spending with more intention has changed our entire financial outlook to where we're in such a better position now than we ever would have been before. So thank you for that. What I'm contacting you today about is a new kind of strategy that I recently heard about for paying off your mortgage in a shorter period of time. The concept of getting a home equity line of credit, using that as your basically checking account and paying down your mortgage and taking advantage of the different interest calculation that you get with a home equity line of credit versus the amortization schedule and front-loading interest on a standard 30-year mortgage. seeing as how I really respect your opinions and everything you guys do with your finances, I wanted to get your opinion on the strategy, how risky it is, and whether or not it really does function the way that it's said to. Anyways, I hope to hear from you. Thanks.
Tyler, good to hear from you. And you know, Matt, I will say, you know what I love what Tyler said there about, you know, intentionality and spending intentionally, how that's changed his relationship with money. And I feel like that's been the case for me. That's been the case for you. There's at some point in our lives, hopefully, we get to the point where we start to assess our spending differently than we used to. And I think spending ad nauseum, not only does it cause us financial problems, but it's like a psychological issue too. And I think when we spend with more intentionality, we're happier people. And we've got more money in the bank too.
Right. Well, and we're spending money on the things that truly matter to us, right? I mean, we're sitting here drinking this really tasty beer, and you and I have kind of eyed each other a couple times as we're recording this episode, because we're going to have a lot of positive things to say about this beer. It is so good. But to know that, you know, we're spending money on this fancy beer, right? But it's just bringing us so much freaking joy. And to know that that's money well spent, as opposed to spending it somewhere else where we wouldn't personally see that kind of return on our money, right? And so it can make a big difference. It doesn't necessarily mean that you're spending more or less, but you're just kind of focusing those dollars on the things that actually bring you happiness. But yeah, Tyler, we're really glad to hear that. And let's go ahead and get into this. This, you know, strategy that you're mentioning is an interesting one. I'm guessing that you saw it on YouTube, because that seems to be the place where a lot of folks are pitching this idea. It's oftentimes called velocity banking or infinite banking. And the promise is that you can pay off your mortgage early in as little as 5 to 7 years. But then, of course, you have that HELOC to pay off as well. And, you know, while it's technically correct that this can save you some money that otherwise would have gone to the banks because of how the interest is calculated, there are some issues with this strategy, with this approach. And it's not something that we would recommend to hardly anyone out there.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit more about kind of the problems that velocity banking, or this attempt to open up a HELOC and put your whole paycheck towards paying down that HELOC and then pay all your bills out of that HELOC. Well, the problem is twofold, really. First, you've got to be completely dedicated to this method, and you've got to be really buttoned up on the details. Because if you don't follow this method to a T, or let's say you lost your job for some reason, that could really mess up your finances. You could find yourself in more difficult financial circumstances if you didn't use this strategy in the exact way that it's recommended. Velocity banking is kind of like the debt avalanche, I would say, on steroids, where you're only looking at interest rates and you're paying down debt like a robot. And, you know, that can be the best method for some people, but it's not necessarily. And secondly,
you have to have no emotions. Like, yeah. Like you really do have to just like pay it down like a machine. And you also have to have the discipline, and you have to stick to it like you are a machine.
Yeah, for sure. And two,
no room for error.
The strategy also assumes that paying off your mortgage is a huge financial goal.
Right.
But really, for most people, Matt, especially nowadays, paying off a mortgage is way down the list of financial priorities for most folks. Like, there aren't many listeners that would reach out and be like, should we pay off our mortgage early? And we would be like, yes, you definitely should. I mean, there are certainly some cases where that would be the case. But in all likelihood, for Tyler and for most of our listeners out there, this isn't a good approach, because you're prioritizing the wrong things. You're getting things out of order.
Yeah, we've relegated the paid off mortgage to money gear number 7, which should be way down the list of the different money priorities in your life. We feel that most folks shouldn't pay more than the required monthly mortgage payment, especially with interest rates as low as they currently are. And so instead, Tyler, we want you to focus on ramping up your investing game. You didn't kind of mention that at all, but you know, if you are investing, that's great, but we want you to just kind of ratchet that up as much as you can. So in this case, we feel that velocity banking, you know, in our opinion, is trying to solve a problem that doesn't necessarily exist. It's just an overly complicated way to just save a few bucks. And that's actually kind of like almost like a third problem that we have with it, is that you're not saving all that much money. It's a lot of hassle. It's a lot of jumping through hoops for saving a few bucks on a single payment. And the idea is that over months and years of doing this, yeah, you're going to end up saving more money. But again, there's not a lot of return on your investment for the amount of work that it involves. I would rather you take that mental energy and effort and pour it into something else where you're going to see a significant return on your time as well as your money. So yeah, while velocity or infinite banking isn't technically incorrect or wrong. For what, 99% of people out there, we would not recommend it.
Yeah, I love what you said too, Matt. You said that it's trying to solve a problem that doesn't exist. It makes me think of like late night infomercials, which I haven't seen one in a while, I'll be honest. Like, I don't watch traditional TV anymore. Like,
surprised you didn't have one of those on while you picked up your phone from a stranger.
Right.
Freak. Who does that?
That is an old man thing to do. Like, what am I doing over here? But I don't know. Like, there's so many products that you'll see pitched during late night television, and you're like, what problem is this actually solving?
Right.
But it's to the people who are just hungry for entertainment. That's why they're tuning in, and they're like, yeah, that product, it's going to do it for me. Like, I should get that. You know, 4 easy payments of $19.95, I'm in. And similar to that late night infomercial product, you probably get it and it sits on your shelf and it wastes away. And I think that's similar to what Velocity Banking is doing. It's just not actually solving the problem that it's claiming to solve, because that problem isn't a problem that exists in the first place. But all right, Matt, we got a couple more listener submissions to get to, including a question about robo-advisors. And then we actually have a tip from a listener that we're going to get to. We'll get to both of those right after this.
All right, we are back from the break, and let's hear that question about robo-advisors.
Hey, Joel and Matt. My name is Jen. I'm from Reno, Nevada. I have a question about investing. I currently invest some money with Elevest, which is a robo-advisor, and I've been pretty happy with the returns. But I also recently met with a registered investment advisor, and I wonder what you guys think about the trade-off there. The investment advisor has higher fees but more personalized service, and I just wonder where you guys come down on that balance. Thanks so much. I love the podcast.
Jen, thanks for your question. And before we get into specifically talking about robo-advisors, like I will say we feel like a lot of folks can handle investing for retirement on their own without even the need of a robo-advisor. You know, we talk about, it's basically like this sliding scale of DIY, robo-advisor somewhere in the middle, and then hiring a full-on your own financial advisor on the far end of the spectrum. And we think a lot of people can succeed just going the DIY route, right? Just low-cost index funds, target date funds, like we talked about earlier in the episode, might be all that you need to know. And then you can bank the savings from not having to pay a fixed fee or a percentage every month. And that's what a lot of our listeners should be considering before they go with the robo-advisors. But at the same time, we don't hate on robo-advisors. There are some really good ones out there that provide a lot of benefits to their users. And we just don't want it to be the default move. But Jen, Elevest is, in particular, is solid, and it specifically caters to women, which is cool. We feel like Elevest is one of the cooler robo-advisors out there. And it sounds like it's been good for you, at least over your investing lifetime so far.
Right. So let's get to your question, Jen. You know, should you ditch your robo-advisor, Elevest, in favor of like a one-on-one relationship with an investment advisor? And honestly, much of that depends on what it is that you're getting with Elevest. You can ask yourself, you know, do you like the interface and the investing options available? That's definitely something to consider. You mentioned that you like your returns so far, but something else that's important to keep in mind, I think a lot of folks have liked their returns over the past year, regardless of how it is that you've been investing since the stock market has been on fire for the past year.
I will say, yeah, I think you're right, Matt. I think some people, they're like, my returns have been great, but everybody's returns have been great,
yeah,
if you've been
regardless
invested normally in the market.
So. Yeah, even if you're paying like a 1 or 2%, you know, expense ratio or fee, like which would be insane, you know, we wouldn't recommend that. But like, you know what? When you're earning like 40% on the market, like 38 still seems pretty good, right?
Yeah.
But that's not what we'd recommend. And so the question of staying or going, it should center around whether, Jen, your current needs are being met or if an advisor would be, you know, of more substantial help for you.
Yeah. And so if you do want to go with a financial advisor, it's really important to know how that financial advisor is compensated. That's one of the crucial things you need to find out before you ditch Elevest and you move on with a financial advisor that of your own choosing. In particular, a CFP designation, along with that advisor being a fee-only fiduciary, it goes a long way. And so, yeah, we would suggest asking how they're compensated, asking if they're fee-only, and asking if they're a fiduciary. You'll even want them to sign something stating that they will act as a fiduciary with your money. You want to pay your advisor directly for his or her time and expertise. And that's a much better arrangement than paying a percentage of your assets or paying commissions to that person. You'll also want to ask specific questions about whether that advisor uses funds with low-cost companies. Luckily, you mentioned that you met with a registered investment advisor, or some people call it a RIA for short, and they legally have a fiduciary duty to their clients, so you know that what they're picking, the funds they're putting you in, how they're investing your money is in your best interest. That's what fiduciary means. It just means like, hey, I am legally bound to do what's in your best interest, not a blend of what's best for you and what's best for me.
Yeah, and so in our opinion, the top reason to consider hiring your own financial advisor is because of the behavioral help that they can provide. They can give you the coaching that you need to continue investing and to help you to not sell at an inopportune time when the market is having a rough month or a rough year. So for instance, look back to like March of last year. Did you continue to invest like you had planned on doing? Great. Did you buy more? That's great as well. But did you sell as the market was tanking? Then this would be an instance where I'm sure it would have been great to have had a coach there alongside you. And so if that's important to you, considering an advisor relationship might be helpful. But if you feel like you just need someone to sign off on what you're doing or kind of give you a tip or two, you probably don't need one, or maybe you just need, you know, limited access to an advisor like that. And LFS will actually let you purchase a small amount of time with one of its CFPs. You can get 2 retirement checkup sessions for less than $300 with just the basic plan with Elevest. So in that case, yeah, maybe just stick with them for now. Try that out. And if you feel like you need more help down the road, you can always opt for that one-on-one relationship at that point.
That is one of the things I love about some of the robo-advisors is I think it is daunting to be like, how do I find the right advisor? How do I pick the right person who's going to help me? And the fees can be daunting too, right? And you're like, do I need to pay it every single year? And that's the business model for a financial advisor is, you know, you continue to get their advice and you continue to pay them. But the cool thing about some of the robo-advisors is you can kind of pick and choose when you want to talk to somebody, and you can get a few of your questions answered, or you can have some of your fears calmed in just a couple of short meetings. So that might be the best of both worlds really for Jen here. And also to Jen, if you do decide that you want to go with a financial planner that offers more robust services than what Elevest is offering you, if you're looking to get more than just that checkup, then XY Planning Network is probably one of our favorite spots to find an advisor. We'll link to that in the show notes. NAPFA is another great place. Just by going through one of those websites, you're going to find a fee-only fiduciary planner. Like you don't even have to sort through that. Like those networks only refer fee-only fiduciary planners, so you can feel confident when you're finding a financial advisor through one of those websites. And interview too a couple of different advisors and see what they offer. You might be impressed with what they have to offer. They might be offering services that you didn't even know that you needed. So yeah, interview 3 or 4 potential advisors. Set up a quick 30-minute call. That'll help you make an informed decision.
And the benefit there to reaching out to a couple of those different networks is that you're kind of you're stepping outside of the fence of Elevest, and they seem great. But it's also good to get a second opinion outside of the platform that you've been investing with. So, Jen, best of luck to you. All right, let's go ahead and switch things up now. We actually have not a question, but a tip or a recommendation from a listener that pertains to our cars. Let's hear it.
Hey, guys, this is Chris from Macon, Georgia. I recently heard on one of your podcasts how you struggled with headlights that were fogging. The critical part that often is missed, which results in the headlights degrading after going through the process, is we fail to protect the headlights after. In the cleaning process, you're sanding off the protective layer of the headlights, and we need to restore this layer after completing the polishing phase. You can restore that layer either through applying a wax or special sealant to the headlight. Most people already have a wax for the car and can get by with reapplying the wax every 3 to 4 months on the headlights. Have a good one.
Chris, thank you for the tip. And Matt, I will say I did actually get around to defogging my headlights. Like when you looked at them, they were kind of yellow and gross. And like,
looks
you know,
like your van had like cataracts.
Exactly.
Kind of a little foggy in the eyes there, bud.
That's to be expected from a little 06 Honda Odyssey, you know, still putt-butting around. But so what I did actually, I looked up some YouTube videos and I found out that one of the easiest ways to go about clearing your headlights was to put some gritty toothpaste on them.
Yeah.
Use an old toothbrush. I just used my wife's toothbrush. She'll find out about that later.
Don't tell her.
But then you like literally just, you kind of, you know, use your elbow grease and you go hard and you rub it into the light in a swirling motion. And so I did that, man. We'll post some pictures on Instagram of the before and after. It made a huge difference. And I feel like, you know, it just looking at it from the outside, it like makes me love my car more. And then two, it makes the lights shine better on the road. So it was super simple. It took 5 minutes and I recommend it to to anybody. But I had not done what Chris said here, and I haven't done anything to kind of make sure it doesn't happen again quickly.
To seal it. Yeah. So we appreciate that tip, Chris. This is a way to make sure that the work that Joel has done will last.
And
Joel,
so it's not in vain.
Yeah, seriously. And I'm super impressed that you didn't use like one of the drills with like the spinny scrubby things, or even like a rag where you're like really able to lay into it. The fact that you literally just used your toothbrush and kind of like, you know, just kind of wiped it with the toothbrush.
That's what I saw somebody do on YouTube. I was like, all right, done. I can do that.
It's super impressive that it actually got that clear by just using that. But dude, this actually makes me wonder, like, have you ever waxed your car like at all?
No, never.
I haven't since like high school.
I've never had a nice enough car to feel like I should wax it.
Well, here's the thing. Like, you know, I recently used some turtle wax to buff out a scuff on our Honda, which totally worked, by the way. It kind of got that scrape out. But it also made that section super smooth and slick. And it made me realize that waxing your car, it's not just to make it look extra fancy, but you know, you're also protecting the paint and the finish. I think maybe for a lot of folks, this is probably a no-brainer.
You're like, duh, Matt.
But it puts the idea of waxing my car in a new light. It's not something I would have at all been interested in before, because I'm like, I've got a, you know, it's kind of old van. I'm not interested in maintaining this thing. Like, I don't want it to look super nice. That's not what I'm trying to do. But if I were to do that, you know, it's going to stay cleaner longer, and it's going to maintain that paint, keep it in good shape. I think just in general, maintenance is highly underrated. We're always kind of looking to the next greatest thing to get to replace whatever it is that we have instead of taking care of the things that we have.
Yeah, so we buy disposable stuff, toss it, get the next thing.
Exactly. Yeah. So Chris, neither one of us knew about that wax tip. So make sure, get that wax on those headlights to protect it. We really appreciate that tip.
All right. Nice to have a tip on the show too, because we don't know everything. We need our listeners to inform us of stuff too.
Especially about cars. You know, we had the car chick on recently. She let us know what's up. It's good to hear from Chris as well.
No doubt. Let's get back to the beer that we had on the show. This one was Lovebirds 4. Delicious raspberry beer from Birds Fly South. What was your take on this blended sour aged in oak barrels?
Dude, anytime we have a sour that's aged in oak, I'm going to basically swoon. It was so good. It was fruity, really acidic. It had a little bit of funk going on. But dude, it had so many of those woody barrel notes, and I can't get enough of that flavor. Again, it was just really high in acidity. Really love this kind of beer. It's totally in my wheelhouse. I cannot speak highly of it enough. But yeah, what were your thoughts?
So I think sours that are aged in oak barrels are almost always better than sours that are made quickly, and they call them kettle sour beers. And this beer is like, man, this is one of the top 10 beers I think we've ever had on the show.
Oh, really?
I think this is that delicious. It's a real winner from Birds Fly South. It makes me want to try even more of their stuff. I think I've only had a couple of their beers, and you know, they're not too far away. So maybe
I've been up to their tasting room before.
Say, I'm jealous.
Yeah,
take me next time.
Up there in Greenville. Let's do it, dude. It's not that far away.
All right, we'll make it happen. And yeah, if anybody out there likes sour beers, like fruited sour beers, Lovebirds 4, total winner. Make sure you pick it up.
That's right. Well, Joel, that's going to be it for this episode. Listeners, you can find show notes up on the website at howtomoney.com, and we'll make sure to link to any resources, any of the different websites that we may have mentioned during this episode.
Yeah, and if you have a question to submit for a future Ask How to Money episode, we'd love to hear it. Just record your question on the voice memo app on your phone. Send it to us at howtomoneypod@gmail.com. Super simple, and we hope to take it on an upcoming episode. But Matt, until next time, best friends out.
Best friends out.